Okay, thank you. I think that Max is next on the stack.
Well, I'll pass.
Okay, next is Ted.
No, I have my name on the stack, please.
And this is Deb?
Deb, yes.
Okay.
I was on the stack. I was speaking when we decided to go to 10.
Okay. The next person is Ted. Did you wish to speak?
I thought Deb was next.
Okay, Deb.
Thank you. A couple of things that I want to rebut here. What the offense was, and he was charged with it and knew what it was, everybody knew what it was. He made a libelous statement about the general manager in an open meeting, and he is a member of the MSRC, and he should not have done such a thing. It was libelous.
MSRC is what?
The Management Selection and Review Committee. The policy had been established. He did have an attorney there. It is not our fault or the fault of the board that his attorney had to leave at a particular time. If that were a valid defense, then all he'd have to do is not have an attorney present and nothing could be done. He had an attorney present. He was obviously notified. He was notified properly. The attorney left. That is not our problem. That is between him and his attorney. The reason that, there was a vote that was taken, and it failed to get the two-thirds majority. Even though Ted had said that a straight majority was fine for New York, we decided that we would stick with our interpretation of the bylaws and the Roberts rules, that a two-thirds majority is required to remove anybody's voting privileges. So we did not receive that. There were several people who were reluctant to put a member completely off the board. Susan thought that the matter was done. She's the chair. And she was looking for a motion to adjourn. She called on Lisa. Lisa did not make a motion to adjourn. She made a motion to levy a smaller penalty of a suspension for 60 days, and that was passed by a supermajority. On August 31st, the other trial that Ken is talking about, he had attended every single meeting. He had sat at the board. He was wearing a gag, signifying that he'd been gagged, and he was dictating policy. I can't say that, but he was talking incessantly to board members who agree with him on almost every issue, let us say, keep it within bounds. And what I moved was that his suspension start when he stopped appearing at board meetings and insisting on taking his seat at the board and participating. That was not another trial.
Can I get on the stack, please?
Can I get on the stack, too?
Okay, thank you, Deb. Next is Ted. Ted, did you wish to...
Yes, I would. I would like to let you know, first of all, that the code of conduct that we have describes things like treating other people as you would like to be treated yourself. Verbal or physical attacks are not tolerated on Pacifica and KPFT property. Discussion shall be centered on issues, not people. Okay, the motion that Ken made in a public session was a motion that was critical of a staff member and that we should vote that this staff member should be terminated. At the time that the motion was made, the person chairing the meeting said, "Is there a second?" That person then later filed the initial code of conduct violation against Ken. I pointed out to that committee chair that seconds are not necessary in committee meetings. But then another member of the committee who had been out of the meeting because he was involved in a National Pacifica committee meeting, a conference call, came in and threw everybody, Ken first and then others, out of the meeting and said the meeting is over because of an allegation of slander, when in fact what it was a motion to debate whether or not the employee in question should be retained as an employee. I want to reiterate, the person who was chairing the meeting asked and gave legitimacy to the motion by asking if there was a second. Then later, when this individual who was chairing the meeting wrote his code of conduct thing up, he never specified that he wanted to suspend Mr. Freeland for anything specific. We met in closed session, but there was never a motion raised to suspend. It was always it was initially a motion to expel. I want to say one more thing about this, and that is that Robert's rule says that a committee of three is supposed, or three or more, is supposed to be established to gather evidence when a code of conduct violation occurs outside of a board meeting. No such committee of three was ever, or larger, no committee was ever formed. That alone should be grounds for rescinding this decision. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Ted. Now, Dave is next.
Yeah, I guess one of the things I don't quite fully understand is the notion of what it would mean to rescind. One of the things, first of all, the idea that any vote taken would be rendered null and void is questionable to me, because I know that, like, when we were dealing with the judge during the lawsuits and we were talking about wanting to, undo things that board had done, the question being posed to us would, you know, would the votes have been different had the person been there or not been there? There was some issue of that sort. I disagree with Deb. I think it's kind of remarkable to say that a person can't even be at a meeting. These are public meetings. So, and I do get the feeling that there is such animus now on that board that it's hard to get anything done, and Ken's very presence was an aggravation to people. But I don't think that a board can prevent somebody from attending, and I think, you know, particularly if somebody's trying to fulfill their responsibilities as an elected member and they've been denied that, for whether it's a good reason or a bad reason for them to continue to show up is entirely reasonable. My memory of the Houston meeting was that there was really, when people were talking about the suspension, you know, we talked about the P's and Q's of it, but what kept bubbling up was a very clear sense that people were aggravated with Ken's delaying the conduct of business through the use of Robert's rules. And so I definitely did get the sense that there was more to it than just the technical question of whether he transgressed a rule. Sometimes we heard about the statement he made about their manager and it being a violation of confidentiality, but there were other things that were raised, and the problem is, though, that the whole thing is so convoluted and involved, and also it being a local station issue, it's very hard at this level to be able to get to a point where you're willing to say one way or another what happened. So I'm at rather a loss and wish there were some way to negotiate this rather than legislate it. The one solid point I'll make is that I don't think that a board should be allowed, even if we decide they are allowed to suspend somebody, to determine that they can't attend public meetings.
Can I be put on the stack?
I answer that. Yes, I there was another person who asked to be on the stack before. I didn't get who it was.
Marple.
Marple.
And Bob.
Bob. And then Max.
And Deb, right. I would like to be back on to talk about that.
Okay. R. Paul?
All right. I think, in my opinion, first of all, you know, there are a lot of disagreements within the entire Pacifica Foundation. There are a huge number of people involved, and I think one of the things we have to look at is a bigger picture of what does any of this mean? Are we in danger of tearing the Pacifica Foundation apart by suspending people and saying you can't vote and all of that? And I think there is that danger. So looking at it from, you know, a couple of steps back, I think that, you know, people need to start thinking about the Pacifica Foundation itself and whether or not we really want to have huge amounts of internecine warfare that can never be resolved, which some of this does. The bylaws clearly state a disciplinary procedure, which is removal. And they say how you do it, and there are rules about it. Roberts goes into things that can be done at various points in time, disciplinary, but one of the principles here is when you have the bylaws take precedence over Roberts. The bylaws give what the disciplining may be. And it's one thing, and it's a big thing. And I think that there's probably a reason for that. I think it's because people never intended to have, like, little shots being taken at each other. If you can get two-thirds of an entire LSB to throw somebody off, well, you got them off. And I think that because of that, because the bylaws take precedence, and because the bylaws stipulate the disciplinary procedure that can be done, removal, that this precludes other forms of somewhat similar discipline like suspensions. And I think that the Pacifica Foundation, I think the PNB really needs to address this and make it so that some sort of stuff stops, because it's going to tear the whole thing apart, on top of which, you know, you're going to end up with this never-ending kind of thing. So I think that there's no legal proper basis for doing this, and I think that it's very destructive to the Pacifica Foundation, and I wish this little weapon would be removed so that people don't try it anymore.
Thank you, R. Paul. Bob?
Okay. First of all, I want to distinguish between disciplinary action taken because of grave breaches of order during a meeting, in the sense of intruding and violating the rights of other board members or members of the public who are attending, or abusive conduct towards those other people, versus violations of other types of rules for conduct that happens outside of meetings. Clearly, the New York situation was the former, and the Houston situation is the latter. And so, to me, it's unmistakable that the bylaws would have to contemplate that a board can take steps to make sure its meetings can be run in a reasonable way without outrageous disruption that prevent it from doing its work, or that abuse its own members. So that's one type of discipline. On the other area, I think we're in somewhat uncharted territory, and I agree with people who said it's time that we set a policy as to what are the grounds, aside from conduct during a board meeting, that might be grounds for more serious discipline. And so the KPFT LSB created a code of conduct, but it's never been reviewed by the PNB. And so that's one concern I have there, is just taking disciplinary steps based on something that's never been a network-wide policy. But also, I think there have been enough serious questions about the process by which Ken Freeland was suspended that I think we do have to look somewhat at the section of Robert's Rules that talks about how you deal with alleged offenses outside of a board meeting where everyone was present and witnessed it. These offenses that are being talked about, alleged offenses, were at a committee meeting, and so you have to have a lot higher standard of care, according to Roberts, which I think is appropriate, of care that people's rights are being respected. And it talks about if a member is thus accused, he has the right to due process, that is, to be informed of the charge, given time to prepare his defense, to appear and defend himself, to be fairly treated, etc. And then it goes on in some length as to how that should be done with the committee and so forth. It's clear to me from the documentation and what was said tonight that not all of those protections were followed. And so, because this is such a serious thing, I think, you know, you really have to have a clear bill of particulars, and you can't kind of change the proposed penalty on the spur of the moment because the first one failed, so didn't get two-thirds, so now we're going to move to suspend rather than expel without notice to the person to prepare a different kind of defense for that issue. And anyway, there's other issues I don't have time to get into that I think were troubling about the process, not ultimately whether there might be a right to take disciplinary action for conduct outside a meeting, but the process of really being fair to the person involved. So I think we need to adopt some statement to express disapproval of that, but I am definitely opposed to rescinding actions taken by a board during the period in which the suspension occurred, because that's just a recipe for chaos. And you know, there were not clear ground rules about how to deal with this, although there is Robert's rules. But I don't think the remedy is to undo all the decisions. I think it is, though, to make a statement to say that there are some serious problems with due process here.
Okay, Max is next.
Jane, I'd like to get on the stack.
Pardon me?
Jane, I'd also like to be on the stack.
I didn't hear. Hello?
Is it Serene or Jane?
Is it, who was it that wanted to get on the stack?
Jane,
thank you. Max?
Well, I have questions and comments about both the process and the substance of that would justify such a decision. I have a question in my mind as to whether or not the process outlined in the bylaws was respected in this particular instance. And then there is the question as to whether or not the decision, the violation, alleged violation, warranted the decision that was actually taken. And it seems to me that, I tend to be hesitant to go back and rescind anything, especially when you consider that two-thirds of the LSB voted a certain way. Here in Berkeley, we've had a similar situation, not quite similar, but for at least 10 meetings, we wrestled with our situation here with management. And it was a very difficult process. We went through it. And I just don't see how we could go back and review what was done with the idea that somehow the decisions, and we've had two decisions, really major decisions, could somehow be rescinded by an outside body. Unless there was a clear violation of a pre-established process, and I'm not sure we have that. That's the problem that I have with this whole thing.
Thank you, Max. Next is Jane.
This is Ted. May I get on the stack, please?
And Dave also.
Deb, Dave, and Ted may get on the stack after everyone who hasn't spoken yet has the chance to speak. Jane is next.
Really, it's just a point of information. I remember so much of this conversation around the New York suspension. And did we not come up with any recommendation to the PNB on this matter? Because this conversation is like deja vu.
All over again.
All the time.
But did we not actually come up with anything at all?
I can speak to that.
Okay, go ahead, Dave.
Well, what we came up with is that I happen to agree with our Paul and with Ken about the lack of authority to do anything but remove, but I was outvoted, and the committee's position as a committee was that the portion of the bylaws that grant the right of the extreme measure also grant the right of lesser measures. So that's where it stood. Does that answer your question?
Well, almost. Do you remember when that happened? Because I was trying to find it in our minutes, and I...
Oh,
I,
gosh. Well,
not exactly what...
Some time ago. It was feels to me like...
Yeah, I think I could answer. I believe, I could be wrong, it was in August. And there was another step the committee took, which was to agree to work on drafting a proposed permanent policy on discipline of all sorts, which might include suspension.
Mm-hmm.
to operate in the future. And unfortunately, that hasn't moved forward, but I hope it will.
Well, thank you. You've answered my point of information, and I just would like to again support the notion that it would be inappropriate for us to rescind what that body has done in light of the fact that there are not clear policies.
Okay.
But that we need to move forward on this.
All right. Is there anyone else who hasn't spoken who would like to speak? If not, Deb is next on the stack.
Point of order.
Yes.
Deb is the person who initiated this action against Mr. Freeland. And
no, that's not true.
And I would, since he's only been allowed to speak one time, I would suggest that she should recuse herself.
Absolutely not.
Point of order.
Deb is a member of this committee and should have the right to speak. So I'm going to give Deb the floor.
Thank you. I would just like to address first Ted's, an insinuation, a statement, that I instituted this. I did not. I had no part in any of this. The only part in this I had was making a motion at the 8:31 meeting that the Ken suspension be effective when he stopped attending and seating himself at the board table. And according what I wanted to say to about the attending the meetings, Ken was never prevented from attending meetings. What he did was sit at the board table and kept talking constantly, interrupting. We had a meeting where the meeting couldn't even be called to order for a half an hour because he would not be quiet. And that's why we had to take him off altogether. Let's see what other points I wanted to make. As far as the bylaws go, it has been agreed that if you can remove somebody's membership entirely, you can certainly suspend them for a shorter period of time. We also had bylaws in our own standing rules. It was never said, and it's nowhere anywhere, that a body cannot have its own standing rules. And this whole thing was handled according to our standing rules. It was not brought about by Ken's behavior. It was brought up long before Ken was on the board.
Okay. Ted is next.
Okay, first of all, I would like to say that there is no standing rule with regard to where people must sit in our local station board meetings. And while Ken, at some of these meetings, sat behind members who were active members of the local station board and perhaps whispered or passed notes to members of the board, he certainly did not deny the board the opportunity to meet or to function properly, except that there were people on the board who were raising such a ruckus about where he was sitting that they were the ones who are now accusing him of denying us the right to move forward, who were actually the ones that were denying the body to move forward. I want to ask a hypothetical question. And the question is, in a public meeting of a committee, can a member of that committee move that the general manager of the radio station be recommended for removal? Can they make that motion, or is that, as some people have contested, libelous and not allowed in a public meeting of a management selection and review committee? Because that is the fundamental question that is being raised here about whether or not one can do this in a public meeting. Not the debate of the motion, which could be done in executive session, I would argue, but whether before the body goes into executive session, the motion can be made so that the pros and cons can then be discussed in executive session.
Okay, Ted. Next one on the stack is Dave.
Well,
thank you. Yeah, I said most of what I said about what we'd done before, but in answer to what Ted says, I think it should be perfectly in order for a member to be able to do that, but that's my own opinion.
Okay, where are we time-wise on this agenda item?
Oh, we're 10 minutes over, are we not, Matt?
Okay.
Coming up the whole agenda.
Okay. Ted, I believe you this started with a motion. Is that correct?
Pardon me, I'm sorry.
You were presenting a motion to this body?
Actually, there is a motion. There are two parts to the motion. One is that the action, even retroactively, that suspended can be rescinded
reversed,
basically saying that this appellate body sees that what was done in Houston was wrong, so that we don't follow this precedent in the future. We don't allow this to be a precedent. And the other part of the motion was that significant actions taken during his suspension be rescinded.
Okay. Was there a second to this motion?
There doesn't need to be a second, Madam Chair, in committees.
Okay, I see. All right.
May I read the motion as I have it?
Pardon me?
May I read the motion as
mm-hmm.
I have it?
Go ahead.
Motion is, we ask the PNB that the Ken Freeland suspension be rescinded and any significant action taken during that period be brought back to the KPFT LSB for reconsideration.
Move to divide.
Okay.
Point of order?
Yes.
That's not what I heard him saying. He said rescind, not reconsider.
Right. It says rescind in the text that I have here.
All right, Paul, can you make that correction?
Yeah, for what, rescinding? What?
Oh, that it be rescinded.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're saying it's an automatic thing. The problem with it being that we don't know what constitutes a significant action. So how do you know what has been rescinded?
Can I jump in at this point?
Max, we're out of time.
Oh, okay.
I think we should consider the motion and take a roll call vote on it.
I was going to propose that it be broken into two pieces.
Maker is more than willing to let that happen.
Can I be heard?
Point of order, I need to get that last. Be brought back to the KPFT LSB for...
Oh, not brought back.
Okay.
That the national board rescind what was done to Ken at KPFT.
Well, okay, what I have is we ask the PNB that the Ken Freeland suspension be rescinded and any significant action taken during that period be brought back before the KPFT LSB 4. So how do we want to rephrase that?
No. Any significant action by the LSB be rescinded. I mean, I don't have the hard copy in front of me, but I think that's what I
during the time of his absence, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, that's what it said. Yeah, any significant action taken during that period be brought back before the LSB for reconsideration. That's the second part.
Are we saying reconsideration or rescission?
Well, it says reconsideration the second time. Here's what I have from the draft. We ask the PNB that the Ken Freeland suspension be rescinded, and that any significant action taken during that period be brought back before the LSB for reconsideration. So we have both of those words.
Okay. Was there a motion to divide?
This is Serena. I move to divide.
But before we divide, we got to nail down what we're dividing. When I read what was just read, it was objected to.
Yeah, I must have been wrong if that's the text, because that's...
Oh, yeah, I pulled it off the previous meeting.
I'm pulling it off the minutes.
I apologize.
Yeah, that's why I pulled it, and then I changed it slightly for what was said here.
No, it's correct.
So it's confusing.
A point of clarification before we go on. When did the eviction take place, if that's the right word?
Was that in August, the middle of August?
And it lasted how long?
2 months.
Ken said 7 or 8 months. I don't know.
No, it was 6 days. I thought Freeland said 8/24. He said there were two suspensions. 8/24
was the executive session of the LSB,
and 8:31 was when Deb made the motion that the suspension begin effective when Ken Freeland was no longer sitting at the board table.
When did he return?
November the 1st.
Okay. Oh, that's not 7 or 8 months.
Okay. Paul, is it possible for you to read the motion divided the two?
I'll read it again. It's easily divided. We ask that the PN... We ask the PNB that the Ken Freeland suspension be rescinded and any significant action taken during that period be brought back before the KPFT LSB for reconsideration.
Okay. All right. So now, Ted, you accept the division. Is that correct?
I do.
Okay. Let's take a vote on the first part of that. R. Paul, can you read just the first part?
Yes, I'll do that. All right. Away. Okay.
The first part is,
we ask the PNB that the Ken Freeland suspension be rescinded.
Okay. Let's take a roll call vote on that.
I have a question.
Is this Jane?
Yeah.
Okay.
So he's no longer suspended, so what's the meaning of rescinding the suspension?
He's no longer suspended from the board. He's an active member of the LSB and KPFT, and there's no suspension in place at this time.
So what's the meaning of
it? May I speak, Madam Chair?
They want us to undo history.
Okay.
May I speak, Madam Chair?
Yeah, go ahead.
The purpose of this is to say that the action which was taken was wrong, and it is to set a precedent that we do not do this kind of thing in the future because of never mind. We don't do this in the future.
Okay,
that's
very good. Let's take a vote on the first part, the first section.
Okay. Grace Aaron?
I'm the chair of this. I'm not going to vote.
You can in committees.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Call me later.
Pass. Okay. David Adelson.
Pass.
Pass. Mary Berg.
Pass.
Max Blanche.
Abstain.
Lydia Brazon.
No.
Marty Derwin. Jane Gatewood.
No.
Bob Lederer.
Yes.
R. Paul Martin, yes. Sarv Randhawa, left. Sandra Rolline?
No.
Serene Roberts?
Yes.
Rob Robinson?
What was that? I missed that.
Passed.
Okay.
Rob Robinson, Deb Shafto?
Where's Deb?
She's here, probably unmuting. Was it star 6 unmutes? I'll count that as a pass. Probably looking for her phone. Hakim Takash, Ted Weiskel.
Yes.
Okay, going back to the passes. Grace Aaron.
Yes.
David Adelson.
Yes.
Mary Berg.
No. I don't think it sets a precedent.
There. Serene Roberts.
Abstain.
Rob Robinson, Deb Shafto. I do not hear Deb Shafto, so I'm not recording anything there. Maybe there's a phone problem.
Oh.
Hello?
No, I'm sorry. I was muted. I didn't realize it. No.
Deb Shafto.
No.
No. All right. Is there anybody else who passed or anything who hasn't been called yet? Okay. The count is 5-4, 5 against, 2 abstentions.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Secretary, my record is that the vote is 5-4.
Well, let's see. I have the noes as Berg, Brazon, Gatewood, Rawline, and Shafto. Is that correct? Is anybody whose name I just called not vote no?
That's correct.
Okay. That's what I have. I have 5-5-2.
5-5-2 or 5-4-2?
5-5. I have 5-4, 5 against, 2 abstentions.
Okay. So this is a...
This
so is
failed.
A, no, it fails. Okay, so... because this vote fails, the first section of the vote fails, it makes the second section irrelevant, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Point of order?
Go ahead.
I wish this matter, with the vote of 5-5, to still be referred to the National Board as a minority report.
What? A minority report?
Well, we have to report back. It was referred to the governance committee, so there does have to be a report back. And mm-hmm.
I'm sorry.
I don't understand the minority report.
I don't either.
Well, it will be in the minutes, right? The minutes will be forwarded to the PNB, I take it.
Right.
No, the, what's forwarded to the PNB is the report of the committee, which will just indicate that we considered this question, and the committee voted as the committee voted.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think we've...
point of order?
Ted, I think that your suggestion out of order.
Point of order?
And this is Bob?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead, Bob.
Robert's Rules allows the minority, which in this case is the group that did not have sufficient votes to pass a motion, to apply to the body that they're reporting back to ask permission to file a minority report. So this committee can't really say yes or no. They can or they can't. If they want to write it, they can submit it and ask if the PNB wants to hear it.
Okay. All right. Then
I'd like to be recognized before we move to the young issue.
Pardon me?
Before, I guess we're moving on to Susan Young. Before we do that, I'd like to be recognized.
On this agenda item?
No.
Of Ken Freeland?
No, not on Freeland.
Okay. In which case, we're finished with the Ken Freeland agenda item, and I'm turning the chair back to Dave Adelson.
Thank you.
Can I jump in, Dave?
Yeah.
I did email you some material. An opinion that came from Richard Phelps of our LSB.
Right, I received it.
Yeah, I didn't send it to all of you. I sent it to the governance committee list, but somehow my list on Yahoo or whatever is all mangled.
I'm sorry, I didn't get that.
Yeah, but I thought I sent it to you also, Mary.
I'll send it out to the list right now.
I sent it to 4 or 5 people and tried to address it directly. Yeah.
Okay,
but it's an opinion on regarding the next topic, I guess.
Okay, Serene, what's your point, or did you want to be recognized before we go to this?
Yeah, with regard to the previous vote, I want to place the committee on notice that at the next meeting, assuming there's still a point to it, I will bring a motion to rescind the vote, as I believe portions of that motion are by law illegal. This is with regard to the authority of the coordinating committee to assign or refer or recommend, which should we finally settle on, work to other committees, and on the ability of this committee to exclude coordinating committee members from voting.
Paul, do you have that?
This is a previous notice to rescind the vote on contracts.
You have that in the record, Paul?
It is now, yep.
Okay. So now we're at the Susan Young issue. And the question is, what is the motion before us on this? Is the motion to rule that the PNB rule that Ms. Young is cannot hold that office while a member of... the KPFT LSB?
That is essentially it, Mr. Chair. I'm looking for the exact language from our minutes, but if anyone else can find it, I would like them to point it out. But I would also like to ask if Richard Phelps, rather than just putting something in writing, can join this call.
I think there is no way I can arrange that.
No.
I mean, Richard is, I don't know where he is. I would have to call him.
I do. No, he is actually listening to this call, and I know how to reach him and how to give him the information as to how to join the call.
Why does he, Mary Bird here?
Wait, we'd have to agree to that.
Yeah. Mary Bird, excuse me, hang on, let's have some more. I spoke to Richard, and I think I can at least represent his views, and if I've done a poor job of it, you know, we can hear again. But the reason that we didn't want to guess last time was we don't really want to be, well, I thought that we as a committee didn't want to be spending time hearing testimony from lots of people. But anyhow, it's up to the committee. Does the committee want to accept
I will withdraw that request right now, but ask that if I determine that, Dave, you're not doing a good enough job, that I can bring it up later.
Well, in my conversation with him, the point he made was that the essence of it is that the Miller Advisory Board has the power to administer funds, and therefore, although its name says advisory, that it has actual power, and that since it's appointed by the mayor and it has power to disperse funds, that it is that she should be ruled ineligible if she continues on that board. There is one other question about whether or not we would at the same time make this a standing policy, because there are other advisory bodies that people have been on, such as, in our case locally, somebody was told that they couldn't be an elected member of a neighborhood council, which only has advisory powers.
They have a budget,
though. Oh, they do have a budget?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, I didn't realize that. Okay, so anyhow, I think the central point was the defining feature is the ability... authority over fund disbursement. Oh, there is one other point that I don't think was in what he said, which was the fact that our bylaws do speak to our having to provide, for example, facilities for performance and choral groups. So you could at least make the argument that that was that serving on an appointed body and serving on the Pacifica National Board, KPFT Board at some point could have some overlapping interests. Anyhow...
I have a point of information, please.
Yeah, go ahead.
Has Mr. Phelps been designated by the PNB an expert in this? Or, I mean, I don't understand why his opinion carries more weight than anybody else on, you know...
No, I don't know.
Absolutely not.
So what is the authority for even suggesting that he be introduced to this call?
I don't know.
Yes.
May I speak to this?
Go ahead, Ted.
But, of course, I'm saying that we should go forward without his involvement right now, but we might call him in if need be. And the point is that, yes, this is an error. No, the National Board has not designated him an expert, but he claims to be an expert. He is an attorney in the state of California, and this is an area that he actually works in.
May I be on the stack, please?
I'd like to be on the stack, Mary Bird.
I'd
like to be on the stack also.
That we need to be careful we don't spend all our time talking about Richard and not talking about the issue.
Right.
So are these?
I don't
want to
talk about Richard. I want to talk about the issue.
Okay.
Me too.
Ahead,
I
want to
talk about the issue.
Okay.
Point of order.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, may I read, quote unquote, what appears in the minutes of our last meeting, which apparently is the issue, so we can focus on it rather than
thank you.
All over
do.
The lot.
Please do.
There's not much.
Question. R.E. Susan Young's eligibility for LSB membership. That is it in total.
So the question before us is Susan Young's eligibility Susan Young ineligible as a result of service on the Miller Advisory Board? Go ahead, Sandra.
Okay. Well, I believe that Susan Young has demonstrated good faith in trying to determine
her eligibility to run for the LSB board. Given that, she inquired and received a determination that, yes, it was not a conflict and that she could, in fact, run, which she did, and she is now on the LSB board. She has served on the board for the last 2.5 years, and I do not believe that her participation as a member of the Miller Advisory Board and on the LSB board has violated the bylaws, but furthermore, I do not believe that she has done any damage to the Pacifica Foundation. Now, the bylaws, the particular article that's in question, is not really clear. It leaves a lot of gray area, or it leaves a gray area that's open for interpretation. And we really do need to have some clear definition. I believe the intent of the original bylaw article was that nobody would be allowed to be on an LSB if they were going to abuse their authority to undermine the Pacifica Foundation. In the case of Susan Young, there's been no malice on her part. Her participation with the Miller Board and the LSB has been for the further good of the Pacifica Foundation. And she has already stated that if this committee chooses to recommend to the PNB that it's in a violation, that she will step down from the Miller Board. Bottom line on this, folks, is that this is being presented at a time when there seems to be a very, you know, politically charged atmosphere. And Susan she's not at fault. She really did make a good faith effort to determine if she could even run for the LSB. And she was told basically that, yes, she can. And she did, and she's on the board. And now, after all this time, this is being brought up. Bottom line is, we need to decide if people that are on advisory boards, whether they dispense money or not, are they harmful to the Pacifica Foundation? No.
This is Lydia. I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a point of, I guess so. Go ahead. There is a stack, though.
Oh, okay. Well, you just put me on the stack.
Okay. And just to clarify, we're not talking about sort of retroactively kicking her off. We're just saying whether she can, my understanding is that if she were ruled ineligible as a result of service on the Miller Board, if she resigns from that board, she'd be able to continue.
That's
my
correct.
Understanding.
Yeah.
So, Jane, was it you who was next?
I was one.
I was on. I don't
you
know.
You were on too, Mary? Can we go Jane and then Mary?
Sure.
I was on also, I thought.
Okay. So we'll go Jane. We'll go Max, Jane,
no,
Mary.
No, that's all right. The other, all that is fine.
Jane, Mary, Max.
And Lydia.
And Lydia.
Yeah.
Jane,
put
Mary.
Put our poll in, please.
Okay. Let me write this down. My brain is not working too well anymore. Jane,
it's getting
Mary,
late, of course.
Max. Keeps
doing
that.
Them back there.
Okay, go ahead, Jane.
Okay, so it sounds to me like really there's one key sentence here in our bylaws, and it refers specifically any person who holds an elected or appointed public office at any level of government. So is this Miller Advisory Board, is that a level of government? It doesn't sound much like government to me.
It's a gray area. I mean, because they do disperse funds.
Point of order.
I mean, but Grant, there's so many organizations that disperse funds.
Mm-hmm.
There's all kinds of nonprofit organizations out
right.
there, but they're not government. So what makes Miller Advisor? I mean, they don't legislate, do they?
No.
The issue was that, according to this memo that was sent, the Miller Theater Advisory Board manages an allocation of the hotel occupancy tax to support performances.
But they don't legislate, and government is legislation.
No, it's not
mm-hmm.
just legislation.
No.
There's also an executive branch of the government.
Mm-hmm. Point of order, could we not cross-talk each other?
No,
or
yeah, just
well,
Mary, on the stack.
Ask, I did kind of ask a question that needed answering.
Okay, well, maybe
and then I don't have an answer to it yet.
Maybe people's responses will address it. Mary?
Yeah, that was a point I was going to make myself, that I also, I looked at the website, I read all the stuff. I don't see that this is a level of government. The fact that they manage funds that come from a tax, they have nothing to do with any of the branches of collecting or legislating or anything, that tax. And the other point, which I think is, to me, a strong one, rightly or wrongly, in any case, Terry Bereshit, who was the national election supervisor, ruled that it was okay. Her position hasn't changed from that time to now, so he ruled on the situation that now exists. If in the future that would be found wrong, or we might say that we might ourselves decide that, I don't know that I would, but just hypothetically, we might decide to that his ruling was not correct for the circumstances, but it wouldn't be retroactive. That's what he said. On that basis she ran. I don't see any justification in trying to make the decision retroactive after she's already been serving. I think that should continue. We just might want to make a different precedent again. I don't know that, because I have a question the same as that it isn't even a government thing. But I just cannot think that she should, it, anything like that should go retroactively and strike down what he said. There's nobody to do that. He's the guy who made that determination, and that should stand.
I'm going to add myself to the stack. Max, you're next.
And I would like to be added to the stack as well, Dave.
Okay. Yeah. 2 points. First of all, it seems to me that she acted in good faith. She went to the election supervisor, and he was the only person who could decide on that. And he made a decision that it was okay for her to run. I don't see how, after the fact, we can go and disqualify her. It seems to me that in the future we can revisit the issue and set the bar higher or lower, whatever. But it seems to me that the whole thing was handled properly. That's my number one point. As for that group that she serves on, that board she serves on, somebody has mentioned, a number of people have mentioned, that the board controls tax money. Was it the case that some of that money was destined for KPFT, and that she voted in a certain way that interfered with our ability to get the money? I'm just asking the question. Was there any potential conflict there at some point during her tenure that raised the problem? Are you listening to me, or
mm-hmm.
am I on?
Yeah, no,
yeah.
We're hearing you. Well, I hope it will be addressed in further comments. I agree with R. Paul that we shouldn't engage in crosstalk on each comment. Is that all right, Max?
Yeah, that's fine. Yes.
Okay. Lydia?
Okay, my question is, when she was running, did she disclose this? So that my question is that those who voted for her, did they know she was on this other board and had no problem with it? So that's one question. My personal feeling is that it is in violation of the bylaws. I happen to disagree with the bylaws, because it does affect really good people locally here in terms of the neighborhood council. And Terry Bereshit clearly was not consistent, because he had disqualified someone here who was on the neighborhood council. And so, but I do think it's in violation of the bylaws. Having said that, given the fact that Terry Bereshit said to go ahead, then I think that it would be totally inappropriate to ask her to step down from the other board in order to serve on this board. I think once we have, I feel that on a number of issues, when whatever the rules are, when people run to be on the local station board, we can't later then add conditions to their attendance or to any other thing, when that is not the understanding that at the time that they ran. So that's my statement. But I would like to know is, what did the listeners who voted for her know about this? And if they voted for her knowing she was on this board, then that's one more reason to just let it stand. as much as I disagree with the whole thing. Anyway, okay. That's it.
Our Paul, then me, then Ted.
And then Deb. Bad Deb, just exactly.
Okay.
I had asked to be on the staff, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Serena. I'll put you ahead of me and after our Paul.
No, okay. I think I came in after you, but before Deb.
Oh, okay.
All right. First of all, I don't know anybody involved in this, so I don't know, you know, the politics or the personalities or anything. I'll also point out this committee isn't making some sort of ironclad determination. If we pass a motion, if a motion gets brought up, if we pass a motion, it will simply go to the PNB. We're not the determiners. We're sort of the pre-processing group for it. So we're not determining things, and that's the end of it. I'll also say election supervisors make all sorts of decisions that I think are bad. So because one let the person go in, that doesn't mean that, you know, all of Pacifica is bound forever by an election supervisor's decision made during what seems to me to be pretty chaotic election stuff at Pacifica. I've looked at this. I've read lots of this stuff. As nearly as I can determine, this is a government thing. This is a government body. And the Pacifica bylaws, looking at Article 4, Section 2A, eligibility, it says anybody who holds any elected or appointed public office at any level of government, federal, state, or local. Well, this is an appointee by the mayor. That certainly makes it a political thing, and the mayor is part of the government, so this is a part of the government, I think. And so I would have to say, in my opinion, that this is a problem, and that she really would be, in my opinion, in violation of Article 4. As for retroactivity, I think it's another question. I think we have two things here. I think the main thing that I think, though, is that it is reasonable to say that she can't be on both and to give her the option at this point. Not to say, like, bang, you're automatically kicked off, but I would say we would have to give her the option to say, choose one or the other, and that's it. So I would have to say, from my reading of the bylaws, and the facts that have been put in, I think that she needs to make a choice of this Miller thing or the LSB.
Okay, I'm next on the list. A few things. First of all, people have raised Terry Barishas's original comments. I agree with R. Paul that, you know, just because they did it doesn't mean it's etched in stone now and can't be undone because they do make mistakes. I will read, however, and this is very helpful to have, this was from Richard's memo that Max sent around, what Terry said at that time. He said, this is his interpretation. He says, this is how this bylaws provision will be interpreted for the purposes of inclusion or disqualifications of candidates on the ballot, but please be aware that my interpretation is not binding on future legal challenges that could occur. Then he says, assuming the term elected public office is reasonably clear, I'll focus on the meaning of the term appointed public office at the local, state, and federal level. I believe this term applies to offices created by municipal charters or state or federal statutes that exercise some decision-making authority with direct impact on the public or administer public funds. I do not believe this term applies to advisory bodies or positions or bodies created by resolution or executive action that do not have the authority of law. For example, a tax abatement commission authorized by a municipal charter that had authority to grant tax abatements would be an appointed public office, while a sister city commission created by municipal resolution that advised the city council on policy options would not be an appointed public office. So the Miller, according to this memo, the Miller Theater Advisory Board is appointed by the mayor and confirmed by the city council, and defined in Section 32 of the City Code of Ordinances, i.e., it sounds like a governmentally established body.